anybody to testify on House Bill number 2?
Representative Freeman, the sponsor.
Freeman, you take a seat up here anyplace, table is so long.
Anyplace.
Wherever I'm here, anyway.
I'll sit here, it's in the center there. Have to yield so long. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'll try not to get too long-winded with this. You and I are well acquainted with it. I don't know about the three other members. I don't know how much time they're spending looking at the thing, but I would try to be brief about it, and if there are any questions, why, maybe that would be the best way to handle the thing. To begin with, the purpose of the bill, I think, is stated just about as well as I can state it in the purpose of the act. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of proud of that. I wrote that one myself, with almost word for word. The reason for the bill in the first place, because of quite a number of young people in my district came to me and complained about the problem they were having obtaining a place to build a home. The price of land is scarce, the price is so outrageously high that the time they figured out a way to come by the land, there was nothing left or any way they could build a house on it. I went back and checked the method that the state had been using since statehood, of disposing of their land for residential purposes, and that is by auction. They surveyed the land into lots and auctioned it off at public auction, and allow the people to buy it, a high bidder to buy it 10% down, 10 years to pay, 7% interest. And this seems like, you know, that was a proper way to do it. The problem is that the people who were buying the land were buying it not merely for a place to build a home on, they were buying it for speculation. And I have no quarrel with speculators. There's nothing illegal or immoral about it. But what they were doing, because they had enough money they could afford to do that, because the land was scarce and the opportunity available and the spare money available, the people that were buying the land was not the ones that really needed it. As I said, from statehood, the land has disposed of its, the state has disposed of its land for the, mainly for the purpose of providing revenue. And the first years of statehood, I didn't object to that because the state did need the money. But since the advent of the North Slope oil, I don't think that the few dollars the state gets from selling its land and it ending up in the hand of speculators is the best and highest use for that land. So to try to solve this problem, I drew on my own experience when I first came to Alaska some 31 years ago. The federal government had a home site program available. Under the terms of that act, a person could get up to 5 acres of land, and you could, by occupying it and building a habitable dwelling, and you'll find these words as best that I could remember them in this language of this bill. Then you were given, for the price of their survey, you were given patent to the land, free and clear. As I said, the first home I ever had in the state was one of those home sites, and I'm not saying that I couldn't have made it without it, but in those days it was a great help to me. It was a time when it did mean something to me, the help, and I appreciated it very much, and I have a great belief in the idea that it was a good program. So what I was trying to do here at the state level was to, in effect, duplicate that. So if you go through this bill, you'll find a lot of language that, as I said, is the best I can remember from that act. If you, under the terms of this bill, provisions of this bill, you're required to live in the state 3 years, and then when the state has land available, you apply for a permit. That permit costs you $10, and then if you are granted, if you're fortunate enough to get one of the lots. You live on it, and you build a habitable dwelling, upon it, and you live with it in the house at least 7 months out of the year for 3 consecutive years. And at that time, the state will give you patent of the land for the price of the survey. I suppose everybody has a different idea about, in their own mind, as to how this thing would work. But I envision that it would work no differently than it does now, in that the state would go out in the proper location, a location of their choice, and would survey the lots and then make them available to the public. There's one thing one provision here that you'll notice, and I'll touch on it lightly because I'm sure that I see Commissioner Martin here, and I would assume that he's probably going to testify on the governor's home site bill, and there is a great difference. But there's one thing I want to call to your attention, that that's in a provision that's in this bill that I think is most important. It's what I consider the real guts of the thing, and that is a provision that says at any time there are more applicants than there are lots available.
What line are you on,
sir?
What page are you on?
Okay, I'm sorry. I promise you. I think you'll find it on line 20, page 2, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
It says, if the number of applicants qualified for homesite entry exceeds the number of available homesites offered, or if several applicants apply and qualify for the same homesite, priority in award of an entry permit shall be on the basis of length of residence in the state. And there's the reason, the purpose for that, Mr. Chairman, is to go back what I said I was trying to accomplish in the beginning, and that was to make land available to young Alaskan citizens who were not fortunate enough to have the money to do it otherwise. So I envision that when this happens, that there will always be the case that there will be more people applying for lots than there are lots available. And so it seemed to me that it would be only fair to give a preference to those people who live in Alaska who have the longest residence. I'll give you an example to be more specific about it. The people that I was trying to reach in the first place, let's say a young Alaskan was born and raised in this country, 25-6 years old, and is not fortunate enough to have the financial wherewithal to buy a lot and build a home. And if you give them preference based on length of residence, obviously a youngster that's lived here 25 years compared to somebody twice his age who only lived here 10 years, the young guy is going to have the advantage. One, and I think this is only fair. For myself, I wouldn't have one of them if you gave it to me. I had one, and I know how much sweat and blood and tears it takes to dig a home out of one of those things the hard way, the way I did it. So I wouldn't want one, but I would think that, that this is, to me, this is the most important part of the whole bill, and it's one that I feel real strongly about. And I couldn't think of any other way to reach the people that I was trying to reach other than this. Just to give an example, and again, drawing from my own experience, if you get a piece of land, even if you don't have much money, if you can get a piece of land to start with, and you can build enough of a house to move into and then stop paying rent and start buying boards and nails with the money that you're paying for rent, eventually you can build a nice home. I know because I did it. And there's nothing in this that I consider a giveaway. It's simply giving a chance to some type of person that may not be able to do it otherwise. And I think with that, Mr. Chairman, as you can well imagine, I can go on for hours on this. I've had lots of practice on it. But I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Is there any questions from the committee of Representative Freeman? Snyder?
Yes, Mr. Freeman, on the resident requirement, I assume you've looked into the constitutionality of that question.
I don't, pardon me, Mr. Chairman, I don't have any, let me put it like this. I had a when I started to work on this bill, I've never spent more time and effort on any single piece of legislation in my life. And I worked on it a long time by myself. When I went as far as I could, then I called in the man from the Division of Lands and explained to him what I was going to try to do. And I asked him to go over it with me and work with me and make any suggestions that he might have, which he did. And then when I had finished that, I went to the Director of Legislative Affairs and told him I'd like to have somebody draft a bill for me. And I didn't want just any bill drafter. I wanted somebody that could read what I proposed to do and believed in it and would work with me on it. And that, after some time, was granted. They came up with the right man. And we went over every angle that we could think of, and this is one of the things that we touched on. And the attorney that worked on it said that he could see no reason there, and he named, and I can't remember all of them, but there's numerous cases in our state law. A longevity bonus for old timers is one of them, where they use a length of residence type thing. So I don't have any fears for it from that respect.
Are there any other questions, Mr. Freeman, from the committee? Hearing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Martin.
Thank you. Go here. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I do have some testimony on this bill. I think I might say three things about the bill at the beginning. I'm really speaking to all of the bills that are before you now, not only the administration's, but Mr. Freeman's bill, and those that are similar in the
Commissioner, part. Just before you start, we're going to just take testimony on House Bill number 2 today.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the announcement.
I'm
afraid my testimony is really cast in terms of comparing it with our own, and I hope that'll be acceptable to the committee.
It's acceptable to the committee.
First of all, I think I should just say that the work that the administration's done on this bill owes a great deal to Mr. Freeman's idea, and we really share that idea. We think it is important to make land available to people who need land, and we think there's a very serious problem in this state with regard to the availability and the price of land, particularly in certain areas. We also think that there's something that's just inherent in living in Alaska that gives people reason and cause to expect that land ought to be available and available on a reasonable basis. And I think we start from exactly the same place that Mr. Freeman does, and being frustrated with the situation as it is and trying to find ways to get around that. As you know, the administration opposed this legislation last year and will oppose it again this year as presently structured, but it doesn't come from any difference of what it is we're basically after with regard to this land, to an overall land program. I think there's some things that the committee might well know about our approach to this legislation that's very important. One is, I think, and Mr. Freeman has done this extraordinarily well in his bill, in our opinion, he's recognized that one bill or program can't meet all the needs of the state for land availability. And I think that in his own bill, as well as in the bill that's been proposed by the administration, we've attempted to carve out a singular purpose. And one of the reasons that the administration ultimately opposed the bill last year as it moved through the legislative process is that the single purpose that Mr. Freeman proposed, or the single purpose that we think might be answered by this bill, got distorted and multiplied and expanded. And we tried to do too much with a single piece of legislation. What we're going to need ultimately, as I see it, is a whole range of programs that answer different kinds of needs. We're going to need programs that enable the state to retain certain lands in state ownership for such things as mineral development, timber development, recreation, and other purposes. We're going to need programs by which we lease lands for such things as agricultural development, grazing, or special uses. And we're going to need programs where we actually dispose of land for residential purposes or recreational purposes or other reasons, industrial development. But we're going to need a range of programs, and I think I've said this before to this committee, we're going to have to ask not just the state, but the other landowners that own land in this state to participate in that program. we're going to have to ask the federal government, and we're going to have to ask local governments, and we're going to have to ask private landowners and native corporations to make their land available, just as we ask the state to do it. And we're going to be submitting an analysis to this committee, we hope within the next month or so, which describes the land availability situation in this state. And I think one of the things that you'll see from that is that the state is not itself in possession of land in certain areas which is capable of meeting certain needs. Due to the way that the prior land selections have been made, and due to the rules inherent in the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act, a good deal of the land that's available in this state or owned in this state for certain purposes is in the hands of either the federal government, native corporations, or if it's in the hands of the state, it's university, mental health, or school trust land, rather than simple state public domain. So that we're going to have to look to who owns the land before we decide on uses. Again, I just want to reiterate that I think Mr. Freeman has done something that we very much approve of, and that is he's focused his bill on a certain purpose, and he's identified a specific need and drafted a bill to get there. And we basically have drafted the administration bill that we think is a better version of the same idea to go to the need that he articulated. And that is a need to make land available to people who need land to build on. It's not a recreational cabin bill. It's not a homestead bill. It's not a bill that's intended to do a wide range of things. It's a bill to make land available to people to build on. Now, our viewpoint, and ours is somewhat different from Mr. Freeman's, has a number of differences in it, and I'd like to point to those differences now to indicate to you how we think we would reach the same result Mr. Freeman would, but would do so in a way which would be wholly more satisfactory for the future. First of all, we would convey, in our bill, only residential development rights. Mr. Freeman apparently desires to convey full fee title, and we would object to that portion of the bill. First of all, what the bill does is it intends to convey land to people to build homes. In other words, by passing the bill, the legislature would be identifying a need and then designing a program that meets that need. But unless title is limited, we believe that two things are going to happen fairly rapidly under this bill that are undesirable if that's what the legislature is really trying to do. One is, once title is conveyed, there may not be any reason to believe that that land will stay in residential use. Yet the program would have been created and the land would have been conveyed so as to allow residential use to occur. Second thing that we think will happen is that the land will be the subject of speculation. And in virtually every situation in this state where there's land scarcity, that scarcity is due less to the simple availability of land than it is to the cost of land. Two exceptions to that bill, and I think Mr. Freeman knows this, are Ketchikan and Sitka, where there is a true scarcity of land. But in most cases, the scarcity is only a function of price rather than a function of simple land not being on the market. And in fact, the place where there is the most land on the market is the place where the price speculation and price inflation has been the worst, namely the Mat-Su Valley and the Kenai Peninsula and Anchorage areas. A second major difference from, incidentally, I should just add to this, the legislature's already looked very seriously at this idea of limiting title when it's conveyed as a vehicle for limiting speculation and limiting taxation. Last year they passed a bill for agricultural title that I think is one of the most progressive and innovative things we've done for years in the state. I think we should look at that same concept when we convey title under this bill. We'll hold the taxes down for the people that take it, it will mean that the use won't be changed, and I think ultimately it will mean that there won't be speculation. The second major difference in our approach to Mr. Freeman's is that we would limit the people who are eligible to get land under our bill to people who don't otherwise own land. Now, Mr. Freeman makes what I think is a fairly moving case for individuals owning land in the state of Alaska. But I must say that I think that if we're after the sort of individual that Mr. Freeman is talking about, the Alaskan who is here and wants a piece of land to live on and build on, then it seems to me that we should address people who don't otherwise own land. I see nothing in Mr. Freeman's bill that would prevent a 55-year resident of Alaska who's a bank president from owning land and simply contracting to have somebody build a house on the piece of land that he wins. we believe that if what we're doing is we're trying to reach people who don't own it, we ought to reach the approximately 50% of Alaskans who don't own land, rather than to provide a second piece of land for someone that may already own it. Again, it distorts the purpose of the bill, and it allows people to essentially get second homes, and what you're really creating here is a recreational home site bill, rather than a bill that's supposed to make land available to people to build a house on. So we think we run a great risk in this bill of creating basically land welfare, just giving Alaska land away. And I think that there's justification for that, but the greatest justification for it is to do so in a system which makes that land available to people who don't own land. I understand that that was controversial last year, but I think that I would object to a program very strongly that simply gives state land away to people who already own land or building somewhere else and are simply picking up another piece of land and are doing so simply because they've lived here in the state longer than somebody else. I might say that I also disagree with Mr. Freeman. I understand very much his desire to help, as he has described it to me personally as well as to this committee, an individual who, as he says, has lived 27 years in the state as a young man and wants land. And I'll leave it to the common judgment of this committee whether or not, if there are 200 or 300 or 400 home sites available each year in this state, whether or not a person who's lived here 27 years is going to get any of that land, or whether it's going to be somebody who's 55 or 60 years old who owns another piece of land. It seems to me that we ought to target the program and limit it to what we actually want to do. Still another difference is, and it's in the same regard, is that we would replace Mr. Freeman's system with a lottery system where there's too much demand for available home sites. The legislature will have the capability under this bill to decide how big this program is going to be, because basically it is creating administrative costs and giving away land. So the size of the program can be directly determined by the budgetary commitment that the legislature wants to make to it. We've proposed our program to be small and grow over the years if it works. And I think that basically Mr. Freeman would accept that kind of growth pattern. But we believe that no matter how large the program is within any reasonable bounds, there will be more people asking for home sites than home sites are available. And we would prefer a lottery system to resolve those differences rather than a durational residency test for the reason that I just gave you. We disagree with Mr. Freeman, and my personal viewpoint is that there are constitutional problems, and I would urge this committee to get its own opinion or seek one from the administration through the Department of Law in this matter. I'm not prepared to offer one today, but my indications are that constitutional problems are inherent in this concept, and if you want the bill to succeed, I don't think we should put a time bomb in it that might make it legally assailable because of a durational residency requirement. Now, again, I leave it to your judgment as to whether or not you think that the program will reward the individual that's been suggested, or whether it will in fact reward other people by trying to determine who gets land based on who's lived here the longest. I don't want to dwell on it, but I should tell you that our figures, and we'll be submitting these to you, show that the idea of attempting to ask the Division of Lands or another state agency to adjudicate how long Alaskans have been here is an administrative nightmare, and it would ask for some extremely difficult choices to be made. It would cost substantially more, as we see it, depending on the size of the program, to decide which people have been here longest. And quite frankly, I think we would see in too many cases litigation over who it is that lived here longest. I can think of both arguments that are easy to resolve and ones that are hard to resolve. But in any case, I think we face some real problems, both in terms of litigation, in terms of the constitutionality of the requirement, and in terms of the costs, by imposing a test which is basically one which requires an awfully tough judgment call by the Division of Lands. On the other hand, we believe a lottery system has a certain aspect of equity. It's easy to establish and administer. There's very little question about who wins, and it doesn't require the additional administrative costs. Another very significant difference between the approach Mr. Freeman has taken and the one that Governor Hammond has authorized is that we require local government participation and approval before any of these home site subdivisions are put on the block. Mr. Freeman requires that consultation occur, and he apparently indicates in his bill that where local it's really not addressed in the bill, but basically, it seems to operate on the theory that the local government will not impose controls on such subdivisions. The fact of the matter is that local governments are highly likely to impose controls in the area of water and sewer and roads that are simply local requirements that can't be overcome. What we've required in our bill is that the local government must approve of these subdivisions, and that in order for any local government requirements of subdivisions not to apply, rather than simply overruling them or attempting to overrule them with state law, we require that they be waived by local government. And we think that's a concept that shouldn't be lost. I think that this committee will probably get very much the same sort of testimony from local governments. Those are really the five major differences that we think are important, and there are a couple other differences that I want to mention very briefly to the committee. One is, we think that one of the great failures of the open entry program, and it's one that both, this is not a difference but a similarity between the two programs, was that the open entry program basically simply opened the land without any directions for administration or any guidelines. We think both Mr. Freeman's bill and the state bill are well-founded in the sense that they require prior decision-making by the state and prior subdivision prior to putting this land on the market. But we think that in spite of this, there could very well be problems with a program like this that we ought to monitor closely. So the way that we've proposed our program is to have it start small, grow to a size which within 3 or 4 years would put 200 or 300 sites on the block every year, and then to put a sunset provision in the bill itself so that future legislators do not have to face the unpleasant political task of having to repeal a program that didn't work, if in fact that's the case. If it works and it's as popular as we hope it might be, then the legislature would simply have to reenact the program as it is. But we think putting a sunset provision is important. There's one error in our bill that I would point out, and that is that the eligibility age of Mr. Freeman's bill is 18, ours is 19, and ours should be 18. We believe that we have some additional flexibility in our bill in that the occupancy requirements for each year, Mr. Freeman requires 7 months for each of 3 years, and we require 21 months during a period of 3 years. We simply think that some people may want to, rather than living out there every summer during the good weather, may want to go for extended periods of time where they build and not live at all on the land during the first year while they're maybe working or putting together financing, and we think that flexibility is a wise idea. There are some other differences that are important. Now, turning just very briefly to the fiscal note, I think we've supplied a very thorough fiscal note on this bill, and we'll be supplying a fiscal note addendum which deals with Mr. Freeman's bill at an early time. Basically speaking, we believe that the bills are some, if you assume that the size of the programs will be comparable, that is building up from an initial first year effort of 64 settled area lots and 10 remote lots up to a level in 3 years of 192 settled area lots and 30 remote area lots, we think the costs are reasonably similar, starting with about $104,000 the first year. Mr. Freeman's bill would add, because of the length of residency test and the adjudication desired, substantially to that cost. As we see it, it would be from $40,000 to $60,000 a year, and I will be supplying those figures to the committee. I guess in closing, Mr. Chairman, before taking any questions you have, I'd say this. We think that the idea of this bill is a good one, and we think that even in its best form, it has problems and is somewhat marginally acceptable, but it does respond to a very important public need. If the same thing happens to this bill that happened last year, if it gets distorted in purpose and gets ornaments attached to it, I can tell you that my own recommendation will be that the bill is vetoed. I think it has potential to be one of the a very fine part of an overall program if the bill is reasonably limited and is put together in a form which is workable and administrable. But I hope the committee will take a close look at some of the ideas that we've attempted to put forward in our version of this bill, which are acceptable, before acting on other bills. I'm disappointed to hear that you're not considering our bill today, Mr. Chairman. We think that it's well worth considering, and that we've put a considerable amount of time in on it to try to develop an acceptable way to make this concept work. Thank you.
From the chair, I just put in new members here. I've been on the resource committee as a member for 2 years, and Bill McKingle, we got out of it from the administration, was Parks and Wilderness. And if we kick this bill around a couple more years, I don't think there'll be any land for anybody to live on. We'll just have a place to wildlife, bugs, bumblebees, you name it. The way the things is going now, if anybody take a look at the Udall bill, that's going to turn our whole state into wilderness, wild and scenic rivers, and you name it, parks. We've been creating parks. Representative Smith was the park man. He created parks all over the country the first year. And I asked, how much will these parks cost? He said, they won't cost anything. The next year he came in with a bill down for $7.5 million. And just to bring for the information for the committee, park is fine. But if you can't complete a park, I can't see where you should take all the land in for a park. If you're going to create a park, you should put it where people could come into it and get some use out of it, put some facilities in. But they want to put one up in Wood-Tick-Chick Park up at Nagnet. 150 million acres. The only people who will ever get to that park is somebody with can charter a twin motor airplane, and those people will be coming from the earth for the last 4 years. Bankers will get like Commissioner Martin said. But bankers will get the money, but the people that's sitting in this room here, I don't think any of them will see it. And all we've been doing in the last 2 years is creating parks. They said we can hunt in them. And when we extended the Mount McKinley Park, you can still hunt in it, but you can't use firearms, so what are you going to hunt? This is the way it goes on. I just wanted to bring this up to the committee. And the bill we were considering this way, Commissioner, was House Bill 2. We don't have too much time as a bunch of us leaving on the 4 o'clock plane. And we're going to try to get this bill up or down. It's going to judiciary from here, and there can be more action taken on it. We would like to get out this committee. It's been named here for a couple of years. It'll be up to the committee what they want to do over to put down and take action on it. Now, is there any questions, Commissioner Martin?
Commissioner, I'm going down two different paths trying to stay up with you. In reference to the title, in your testimony, you said that Mr. Freeman's bill gave free title, but the governor's bill gave something else.
Yes, a limited title, residential title, which would permit exactly the purposes of the bill, that is to own the land. It is a fee title, I said, Mr. Bennett. It would permit them to own the land, to have title to the land, but only for residential purposes. It would mean that the land then couldn't be subdivided later or turned to other purposes, including industrial purposes or commercial purposes, but would remain within the purpose for which it was conveyed.
Let me point out something. In my parochial way of thinking, when you're giving somebody some land to be their land, yet you're tying a string on it and saying that 7-8 years from now, if the road's rerouted or circumstances change, that in fact these people who think they own just slightly over 80,000 square feet, which would be a little over 2.5 acres, but they can't use this for their own purpose. I'm going down two roads. I think the thing is to get land to people, but yet we're tying a string on it as if the people aren't prudent enough to use the land as they see fit.
Mr. Bennett, I agree, but I think what we're doing is talking about two different programs. It seems to me that I agree. I think there are many, many occasions where you want to convey land to people with full fee title to have exactly the kind of freedom that you say. But I'm not certain that you want to do that as a part of a program which is created for the specific purpose that Mr. Freeman sets out here. For instance, this state already has a very solid program for doing just that, a situation in which land can be put on the market, be sold at fair market value, and have people pay a fair market value for it. But as I understand the purpose of this legislation, is to put land in the hands of people who then need to build a place to live. Let me take the middle case, if I may, to tell you what I mean, a kind of a halfway case between your road and what may happen. Let's assume that the land goes up, and again, as Mr. Freeman, I think, admits, we're largely looking at settled areas here to make land available to people so they can build. Let's say that just one or two people out of the subdivision, not because there's a road, but because they simply see that they can get more for their land back, say, I'm going to convert my land to commercial use, or I'm going to convert it to some other use. But the rest of the people there got their land under this program in the faith and in the belief that they were going to be part of a residential area where they could build and do that. It seems to me that the legislature, by passing this bill, is saying, we want people to have land at a low cost to build residences on. If the program that you really want is to give land to people to do anything they want with, then I think we're talking about a different program than this, even though I agree completely with your objective.
Let me ask you then, in fact, aren't we, if we went along with the other bill, aren't we in fact legislating zoning, which my constituents in Fairbanks area are just up in arms about between the second and third class borough?
I don't think that you're actually zoning it, because ultimately for one of these subdivisions to be put in, it would have to be approved by the local government according to our bill, but not Mr. Freeman's anyway. It seems to me that you're legislating a more serious problem for the local areas by simply saying that the Division of Lands will go out and locate this land wherever they want after consulting with the borough, but not requiring their approval, Mr. Bennett. You're doing something far worse than zoning for them. You're simply inflicting a state government action on them without any ability on their part to approve it.
One other question in reference to this, Commissioner. I shook a lot of hands and talked to a lot of people last summer and last fall. I hate to say how many thousand. The Fairbanks area, there was at least 20,000-30,000 attended the fair over a period of a week. And when the subject of land came up, and it most always did, one of the things that they were really upset about with Mr. Freeman's bill earlier, and was tagged the Hippie Homestead bill, was primarily that a young couple who in fact had entered into a mortgage, though they were straight, good young people trying to do their thing, entered into the mortgage buying a piece of ground, not realizing that this would be coming up. And by virtue of having bought a piece of ground, or in the process of paying off a piece of ground, they're totally disqualified for the, call it freebie if you want, though that's kind of bizarre because they'll spend more money in gas and oil and maintenance commuting back and forth if the truth is known. But young people, they want this thing. And this was one of the biggest hang-ups, that in fact, people who spent their money what they felt prudently and wisely and not down in the bars on 2nd Street were in fact being penalized by this very program, and only the shiftless people who in fact had not attempted to put down a taproot within our state are the ones that are eligible. Maybe you can explain this. I'm not sure, Commissioner.
Well, it's just, I understand, and I don't say that the case you make out is an unsympathetic one, Mr. Bennett. It seems to me that the other side of that case is the one that I raised. That is, it seems to me that there'd be no reason under the bill as it's presently structured, HB2, that a real estate developer who's been here in the state all his life and is 47 years old couldn't get a piece of land and have a house built on it, then sell it.
But, Commissioner, in the real world, doesn't that always happen? No matter what we're doing, there is a percentage that pulls a deal and gets away with something that the essential program wasn't for them.
I guess I agree with that, but I don't think it minimizes the point. I mean, it seems to me that what you really have to decide the purpose of the program. If the purpose of the program is to allow people who have lived here a long time to get land for free from the state, that's one thing. But if your purpose is to help people who can't otherwise get land, then I think the best group to define that is people who don't own it. I would not agree, I guess, with your characterization that people who don't own land in the state are, as you say, people who, and I think you're implying that they're not particularly valuable people because they haven't, quote, put down taproots. I think there are a good many people in the state who don't own land who are extraordinarily fine people who simply have not been able to meet the incredibly high cost of land in the state. And what we've proposed here, and these are excellent people, they're just as good as the young couple who made the mortgage down payment. My feeling is that by defining that group, you have really your best opportunity to answer a need without unduly, you know, opening the program up to what I think you and I would both agree is abuse.
Yeah, and to the converse side of your argument, I fully agree with. But I think what you're doing is, in fact, you are making first-rate citizens out of those who have not. And while those who, in fact, and I'm not putting values on which group is best or better, it's immaterial. But what you've done, you've taken one group and you put them to second choice. And the other group, you said you get first choice. And I don't think that that is constitutionally correct.
I guess my our difference, Representative Bennett, is this, that, let me be very precise. I'm sympathetic, very sympathetic to the idea you proposed. I'm just not sure that this is the program to do it. For instance, we've looked at this question of speculation. As I said, the worst speculation, the worst inflation in land prices is the place, are the places where the greatest amount of land is available. In other words, where let's say in the Matsu borough, where tremendous amounts of land have been selected by the borough and put on the market. What we're looking for is a program which will make land available, and we think it's fine to make it available not at a free cost or a low cost. We think it's fine to make it available, let's say, at a market value cost, but to do so under terms, and this is the basis for our limited title idea, by which speculation won't occur. I guess I'm with you on the idea that you should be able to do anything you want with your land, but allowing people, for instance, who have agricultural land in the Mat Valley to do anything they want with it has resulted basically in the loss of virtually all of the agricultural potential land in that area. And I don't look at limiting title so much as a problem of ruining the basic human rights of an individual as helping protect them from the speculation and high taxes that have driven so many people out of that area. And I think they are balancing values, but I think we really have to begin to look in this state at a way to reduce speculation and reduce the change of land out of the use which you and I might agree is the principal use for land. In this case, it's residential land. I understand the balance, but I think we're now at a point where speculation and high taxes are forcing many people out of uses that we might agree are valuable in certain areas.
Seem to think there's a lot of legalities and judicial questions involved here. I think that we should move to pass this out of judiciary under individual recommendations.
Now, we got a motion on the floor to pass the bill out to judiciary on individual recommendations. All in favor, signify by raising your right hand.
No. I'd like to comment before we.
Opposed.
No, I'm not opposed.
It carries. You want to make a comment on it?
No, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, don't I get some equal time here, or are we just going to pass the bill out? At least I came here to testify on the bill itself, and I do have a bill here that's identical
to
the
House Bill number 2?
Yes, sir.
What's the wish of the committee?
I'd let Representative Phillips speak, but it's already been passed out of this committee, and you can catch up with it in
judiciary.
Well, I just feel that I should say a few things anyway, if the committee would allow it. Yeah, well, I have a 2 o'clock appointment, that's why I'll make this fast. I do have information on the bill. I have introduced the bill, which is identical to Oral Freeman's bill. The only exception is the residency requirement and the acreage. And my bill is House Bill 6, in which it says a person that has to meet a minimum of 5 years in the state in order to be qualified for 5 acres. And I do have some information for some changes on this bill, and I'll be more than happy to Xerox and give it to the committee if they want. And that's it.
Well, you probably get your amendments in
it. Okay. Can I give you a Xerox copy so you can pass it on to the judiciary committee?
Yeah. Half an hour or more, we got another bill here. We're trying to get on. We got a bunch of people to testify.
Yeah, Mr. Osterbeck. Mr. Chairman, I am C.C. Hawley. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association. I have very brief testimony, but we do have several people that qualify as expert witnesses on mining taxation in general, and I would like to give them a chance to talk. So I've got about four things that I'd like to go over quickly. First of all, the association does support the mining license tax, at least in concept. We are going to ask for a couple of amendments, but we are not going to fight the mining license tax. We believe that the net tax is the appropriate way to go. In addition to that, we want to leave the door open for the state and the mining industry to mutually explore other means of gaining revenue for the state. And we have two ideas here. We realize the state does have has revenue needs. The mining industry has needs too, and it needs infrastructure. And if we can figure out some kind of a tax that will help guarantee roads, schools, development that mining industry needs, and at the same time pay for it down the line, we would like to work this out. But that is a separate issue. Next thing, we do still continue want to argue against the theory of a severance tax. We don't think it's correct in that the state does not own the mineral deposits. The discoverer owns the mineral deposits. And that's the law. And maybe it needs change, but it is the law. And then we also want to continue to argue against any mineral tax on the groves. Okay, those are some basic points. I know that your time is limited, so I'll give the names of the people and their qualifications that will now appear before you. The next person, an expert, an agreed expert, is former Commissioner Phil Holdsworth. And Mr. Holdsworth will bring you up to date on what has happened on the mining license tax previously, like last year and in many years before. Then Don Stevens will be second witness. He's a district geologist with City Service. He went to school in Alaska, and he will present the results of a computer program which shows that the mining industry does, will, and can pay its own way. If you look at the total revenues developed by mining, mining does pay its own way. The next witness will be Russell Babcock. Mr. Babcock is a district exploration manager of Bear Creek, which is the Kennecott subsidiary. He's also the executive vice president of the Northwest Mining Association. I think it's appropriate that Kennecott should be represented because they basically were the hard rock company that started out in Alaska. They took a great deal of money out prior to 1938, and since 1938 they've been putting a lot of money back in trying to find something they could mine. So I think it's appropriate that Kennecott is here. And then Mr. Vance Thornsberry with Inspiration is also here with some comments on the mining license tax.
Any questions?
Is this a revision of what they were trying to flag last year?
It's
under HB something 92?
Okay. There were two bills that came up. One of them was a gross severance tax, 294. Okay. And we vigorously opposed that. And I believe the administration withdrew it. Then the administration introduced a bill, I believe House Bill 878. And it's 878 is a revision of the present mining license tax. The state believed it would be more collectible, and there were some things that they wanted to correct. in general, last year, the Alaska Miners Association supported that bill, but there were some people within the association and some other people that did not support it. And so that's, and HB 56 is close to that bill. So we're kind of starting where we left off last year.
One more question, Mr. Chairman. Essentially, do the placer miners endorse this?
The placer miners, yes. We do want to make a change for their benefit, for the benefit of the low people on the register. That we think the bottom line, say where this tax becomes effective, should be raised from $40,000 to $50,000. And then the people above that level of income should be taxed. But in general, the placer miners are not affected. A lot of them don't make this much, they don't gross this much. And then also because of the particular ways that you do your bookkeeping and placer mining, why they, it's on the basis of when they sell our gold, and they don't, a lot of times they don't show an immediate income. So, yes, in answer to your question, they're okay.
Any other questions? What was that for the smaller miner now?
Okay, it would be
line 19.
In line 19, we would propose to change that if the net proceeds are over, change that to 50,000, but not over 100,000, 3% of the excess over 50,000. And I might as well introduce another thing that we want.
Let us get through this one.
Okay. Okay, if the net proceeds are over 50,000, but not over 100,000,
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make the motion line 19 be amended to over 50,000, but not over 100,000.
He dropped down on 920 on that. I don't.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you have to continue. If you do that, you have to continue across the page and say 3% of the excess over 50,000. Change that 40,000 to 50,000.
Got a motion?
Would you read the whole change? Yeah, I'd be glad to hand it. Okay. Can I read the whole proposed change for
just this portion is all we can address on this motion.
Okay.
Then on line 21 you add over 100,000.
Yeah.
And strike out but not over 100,000. So it would be over 100,000.
Right.
This is for the purposes of the community. Strike out 100,000 on line 22. And on line 23, you strike.
We struck the whole section. In other words, we're opposing the maximum net be 5%.
So that will go off. Then the tax is 3% of the excess over 50,000. Then where you have $300 put $1,500.
Right.
Plus 5% of the excess over 50,000.
Only make that 100,000. No.
Excess, it has 50,000 in this copy here.
Right on the right.
1,500 plus 5%.
That should be
100,000.
Say we do need this building
at this
time.
And then down on the bottom, on line 29, add the words. Well, what I should do is go and take a recess, or you have quite a few changes here. I'll just read the changes you have written when you're down here to the table.
Okay.
On line 29, after mining, you add sand and gravel. And you also have a memorandum from the Attorney General's office where, in the typing of this bill, they dropped off a whole line, which just, it's just a cleanup measure. You have that memorandum from the Attorney General?
Line up top of?
It's on page 2. And then, you know, on line 28, here should be.
That, those words on the bottom of page 1 are the same as.
And then you get to line 2 up on the top of the page. It reads, it should read sand and gravel, then the Department of Natural Resources shall certify to the department. Page 2 on top of the page. We already have that area taken care of. Yeah. Now, down on line 7, D, here is a change. If mining business operations, then you insert not subject to section 10, and then a small c of this chapter, and then it reads, are conducted in two or more places within the state by one person, comma, those operations, and then add the words, may at the person's option, are considered. That's the other change. Then on line 21 on page 2, after 3, all expenses directly related to the production, comma, add the words smelting and refining. Smelting and. Then turn over to page 3. On line 3, you go to 7, modernization of, and add these two words, exploration and mining. Exploration and is added, and. Then down on line 10, you add a section 9 will be added here. Section 9. Net operating losses. As set out in the IRC, capital IRC. What is that?
Internal Revenue Code.
Internal Revenue Code, as amended. Period.
Mr. Chairman, I think we would suggest one further change. On page 2, line 14, where it says the following deductions incurred, we would like to end the sentence there. And it says during the taxable years, less the following deductions incurred.
Well, you put a period after deductions, you strike all subsequent lines.
Well, you'd put the colon after incurred and drop during the taxable year.
Okay, incurred. Deductions incurred, semicolon?
Yeah.
All that's more or less beneficial to the smaller miner.
Some of that is beneficial, some of it is beneficial to larger companies.
Whole mining industry.
Yeah.
Getting started.
Like this carryover of net operating loss.
Yeah.
You may have a situation where you do lose money, quite a bit of money in 1 year, and this IRC code allows you can carry that loss over up to 5 years. So in other words, this tax, if you're making money, you pay a tax. If you're not, due to business loss, you're not making any money, you're not going to pay a tax, or you're not going to pay as much of a tax. It's a net tax.
There's no objection to withdraw the committee substitute, and it'll go to finance from the list of issues of the committee. Or anybody else want to come to
vote? I'm in favor.
Any objection?
Is there anybody who wants to testify in opposition to the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Gary Jenkins from the Department of Revenue, and I drafted the original bill. We do have some opposition to some of these changes which have been recommended. If you'd like, I can speak to them. Obviously, there are a lot of other gentlemen here who would like to speak to the committee and on the bill, I realize, and I don't want to usurp their time because several of them are from out of town. Obviously, I'm here and we'll have opportunity to speak to it in the Finance Committee and other committees, and so I would prefer probably to give them opportunity to speak if you're inclined to hear them, rather than me reacting to the proposed amendments at this time.
Yeah. Phil and then Don, what
do I can speak? Okay. Do you want me to give mine here?
Yes.
Okay.
This is Mr. Russell Babcock.
Oh, come up here. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as Mr. Hawley said, my name is Russell Babcock, and I'm exploration manager for Bear Creek, Spokane, Washington. I appeared before this committee last year and gave some testimony which represented the position of Bear Creek and Kennecott in this manner, and rather than take up your time, I'll give you a copy of that material for your records. My testimony remains the same, and you could either refer to it or go over that. See that our position is completely in line with what you were just told by Mr. Hawley, and we back that position strongly. I'm also the executive vice president of the Northwest Mining Association, which again has headquarters in Spokane. The Northwest Mining Association represents over 1,600 individuals in the mining and related industries, and many of these live and work in Alaska. Our concern with Alaska mining matters makes it imperative that we work with the state to devise and implement reasonable means and policies for the mining industry, and particularly at this time relative to taxation. I've listed the particular changes, but I won't go into those at this time since we've just discussed that. I would like to make a brief statement about the other aspects of the mineral industry and the taxation problem. Governor Hammond indicates that new industry in the state of Alaska should pay its own way with regard to state expenditures. We believe that the mining industry in the state of Alaska, under the existing corporate income tax and a mining license tax, as we have discussed it here today, would more than adequately pay its way. Direct taxation revenues would be significant, and revenue generated through multiplier effects, other secondary business income and personal income, that is, would be substantial. The governor has also indicated that a mining operation might be short-lived in terms of the future of Alaska. This may be the case. However, it should be pointing out that a mining industry operating at several locations throughout the state could last literally forever in terms of productivity and benefits for Alaskans. Witness the many mining districts of the West that have been in operations for 50 and 100 years and are still going. When one commodity or deposit might be mined out, others would indeed be developed as the need comes along. The mining industry may or may not be very large, but it certainly can be expected to be continuous.
With this in mind, we'd like to recommend the concept of a resource fund as a possible solution to short-term financial problems revolving around the mineral industry. When any new operation begins, certain infrastructure impacts might be felt by a state government that takes the responsibility for providing schools, roads, and other physical needs of a new community. The mining operation responsible for these needs, however, does not generate revenue or tax income for some years after the impacts are felt by the state. A high tax on the operation is not the way to collect the funds necessary to offset the state's cost. A resource fund, however, might provide the means of doing just that. We would recommend that the governor and the legislature of the state of Alaska consider establishment of a resource fund into which special tax or resource tax dollars, such as those generated by this mining license tax we discussed today, be invested. Interest generated by the fund could be diverted into the general fund. However, the equity portion of the fund would remain available to meet short-term infrastructure costs which might be generated by new activities in the resource field. The fund would grow through the steady input of special resource tax dollars, and withdrawals to fund infrastructure would be repaid by subsequent resource taxation, such as the mining license tax, which would result from the new development or operation. Not all new developments will require additional state infrastructure, and therefore the fund should grow into a very reasonable endowment in a short period of time. We would even go one step further and suggest that in these cases, or in those cases where significant infrastructure costs have been met by the state, mining operations benefiting from these special significant infrastructures consider paying an additional amount equal to a percentage of the mining license tax to facilitate accelerated repayment of the resource fund, thus replenishing it more quickly than ordinary. Payment of an additional 50% of mining license tax, for instance, for a fixed period of, say, 5 or 10 years, depending on the amount of infrastructure costs provided by the state, would ensure a timely repayment of the resource fund. It's the opinion of the Northwest Mining Association that such a scheme, whether under a separate non-renewable resource fund or part of the governor's permanent fund, would provide the means for planning in advance for infrastructure costs of the future. Such planning would provide assurances to the industry that a reasonable tax base would be in existence when their operations came on stream. Such a scheme would provide for the construction of schools and roads at the time they are needed, not 10 years later. Such a scheme would provide for a stable, long-term tax and expenditure policy for the state of Alaska. We urge that this committee consider such a scheme, which, if coupled with a reasonable tax, such as the revised mining license tax we have before us here as modified, will provide for a strong framework for a productive and beneficial mineral industry in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. Move to adopt committee substitute for House Bill 56. It'll be going to
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a quorum here present, and I don't think we can do any action on this bill today. We should hold it until one other meeting. At that time, I would have no objections to endorsing the committee substitute.
Mr. Snyder, we had a quorum when we started, and that's all we need. Mr. Miller was in here to make our quorum, and he'll read the testimony and they'll sign the bills after. But so long as you start your committee with a quorum, you can take action on it now. That's the House rules. All in favor of passing the bill on to finance, signify by raising the right hand. Opposed? So ordered.
If we could have testimony to give finance on what your changes will be on his.
There's things that you want to weigh back up.
Here.
No, I mean, I have.
We can give you a copy of the.
I